Welcome to the Full of Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording at 1:37 p.m. That is Pacific Summer Time, and today is July 10th. Well, it was a steady day on stock markets today. The Nasdaq was up about 0.75%, and considering that that is the index that was the most overextended among the large cap indices, and it is certainly giving us some evidence that it is steadying around this 5,600 area. But this is only tentative evidence so far that it has had nothing in the way of a clear upper dynamic, similar in any way that would countermand some of the large downward dynamics that we've seen since the middle of May. But certainly it's steadying around this 5,600 area. This is the third time it's found support in this area, and so far this has been a reasonably inert move. It's nothing compared to what we saw back in 2015 or early 2016, but so far it has unwound about half of the overextension relative to the trend mean. The S&P 500 was in mildly positive territory today. It was up a couple of points, and it has also bounced from the region of 2400. And considering that over the last year we've been treated to a staircase step sequence uptrend in the S&P 500, where it has not pulled back into the underlying ranges, then this region around 2400 represents the upper side of the previous range, and it's a natural area where one would anticipate that support should be found. But we can see that with both these indices, they didn't finish on their highs today, and that we have had some short covering, that they have bounced from the first area of potential support. But now what happens next? That's the big question. Are they going to be able to continue to advance from here, or are we going to get some additional consolidation? And I suspect that we are going to be ranging for a while longer. These overextensions relative to the trend mean have not yet been unwound. This is the least favorable time of the year. And I remember back when I used to cover for David, when he used to go on his long cycling trips, and that you would be casting around for something to write about back in the early 2000s. When it was July and August. But the world has moved on quite considerably since then. There's never a shortage of things to talk about. So, for example, today the Indian stock market was halted a couple of times because of computer glitches. But that didn't stop it from moving on to new high ground, and it is being led higher by Reliance Industries. Reliance spent a lot of money on developing a 4G network, and now it is reaping the benefits of that. That's a very clear breakout. It's a nice consolidation that held the majority of the advance, and now it's moving on to new high ground. The banking sector in India has been a lead indicator for a considerable period, but it has not yet moved to a new high. But it is certainly looking really quite robust, that we have seen maybe a somewhat lengthier consolidation on this occasion, but we still have that staircase step sequence uptrend, and as long as that remains the case, I don't think anyone is going to be particularly worried about it. Then it's also worth considering what was happening in Japan. The Nikkei was up 150 points. It has been flirting with this 20,000 level for much of the last 6 weeks, having ranged below it from December of last year. I continue to think that if we are indeed moving into an inflationary period, and that is I think the jury is still out. There is an incredible disagreement, that we have some people that are vociferously arguing that we are moving into an inflationary period, and then we have those who are saying that the bull market in bonds is still very much in evidence and one should be buying the dips. I'm posting a rather interesting article today by Christopher Whalen, where he is arguing for the latter of those potential possibilities. He's basically saying that any rise in interest rates is going to curtail I guess what he is actually really starting to argue about is that the market has become completely addicted to liquidity, and that any removal of liquidity is going to have deleterious consequences, which will contribute to deflation and stoke a safe haven drive into bonds. So that has been, certainly that has been the case over much of the last decade, that any time we have had one of these problems, then it has resulted in a move into bonds. So, if that's indeed the case, well, if we're going to go into a deflationary episode, well, then that wouldn't be particularly bullish for Japan. But when I look at the chart pattern, what I see is that we had a deep pullback in the latter half of 2015, and it has clawed its way back up to test its peak. It's in the region of this 20,000 level, which is a big psychological level over the longer term. And really, a sustained move below the trend mean, which is currently around 19,000, would be required to even begin to question that this isn't the potential for a resumption of a medium-term bull market environment for Japan. And it's been a while. And considering that it came off of very depressed levels in 2012 because of the devaluation of the yen, then and the yen is also playing a part in the relative strength right now. It has weakened back to test the lows from May, and really around that 115 area between January and March. A sustained move for the dollar above 115 would re-establish the dollar's dominance over the yen, and I think would likely act as a catalyst for a break above that 20,000 level. I think we really should be looking rather closely at the 10-year bond yield in the U.S. because it is the subject of a really quite considerable disagreement. We've seen that yields have pushed higher in a dynamic fashion over the last 2 weeks. It is now pressuring the progression of lower rally highs since December. That 2.4% level is a potential area of support for bond prices and resistance for yields, and it was a little bit softer in here today. I think the most important thing is that yields have largely been going sideways for 4 or 5 years already. That this is, I think, a do or die moment here. Either we're going to see yields moving higher, or we're going to see a failure at this level, and then we're going to see an additional compression in the 10-year. At the other end of the curve, when we look at the 2-year, then we're getting a rather different story. 2-year yields are around 1.38% right now. They continue to exhibit base formation completion characteristics. So there is the likelihood that we are going to get an inverted yield curve at some point over the next few years, and that will then presage the next recession. But there's no evidence of it just yet. That what we are we're only beginning to talk about what the beginning of the next recession might look like, and that is years away, if we consider that where we are in terms of the monetary environment right now, with central banks only beginning at the very they're at the dawn of a tightening cycle rather than at the end of it. So I think that there is a lot of commentary going around right now, some of it rather panicky, some of it rather panic-inducing, but that is also what we can anticipate because we are in a corrective environment. That stock market stopped going up about a month ago, and because the big advances that we've had have stopped delivering on positive performance week in, week out, then people start to get a little bit antsy, and that is quite normal. And I think that also means that we are still in this mean reversion type of environment. And silver prices today were a little bit soft, excuse me, a little bit weaker. But they were able to rally in the middle of the day and were able to close out the day close to the upper side of the range. What I've seen, and there is a number of articles that I've seen that where people are saying, well, this was a massive short covering rally that we saw on Friday. It is right at the region of the lower side of an almost 3-year range. And there is ample potential for a reversion back up towards the mean, and the mean is currently around $17. So that would be an additional $1.40 move on a $15 contract. I think we can give the benefit of the doubt to some additional upside, provided it holds that low that we saw back on Friday. there is certainly a short-term oversold condition. But what it really needs to do is to push back above the $18 level. That would at least break the progression of lower rally highs. When we go back and look at that weekly chart, it has held this downward bias for a year already. And it really does need to break that downward bias to confirm that we're seeing more than short covering in here, that it's more than a return to demand dominance that is very short-term oriented. But so far, it is looking increasingly likely that we may at least get some respite in selling from silver prices. And gold was a little bit steadier in here today as well. But it has not yet pushed back above that May low. It has not yet broken the progression of lower rally highs. What it is in need of is a clear upward dynamic. We did not get that today. It will, and the fact that we have not had that big short covering rally coming through in gold I think casts a doubt on whether we're going to get an additional rally in silver. But we are certainly at a rather critical juncture, because if gold starts trading below $1,200, that is going to open up the potential for quite a considerable correction and potentially back down towards the $1,100 area. So again, this is a rather critical period for the precious metals. And oil prices today were a little bit steadier. But those were some clear downward dynamics that we saw last week, and clear resistance in the region of $50. It's going to have to hold, and most particularly hold above the low from 3 or 4 weeks ago to confirm that we're getting demand coming in at a progressively higher level. But it's then going to have to sustain and move above $50 to break the downtrend that's been in evidence since the beginning of this year. So this is still a volatile environment. And when we look at this trend, that we had a very steep decline in 2015 and late 2014, and now we're in this very choppy environment, and that's likely to remain the case, that there is ample supply that becomes economic around $60, it is less economic in the mid 40s, and it is uneconomic below 40 to drill new wells. The price of oil, the price of any commodity, is all about the marginal cost of new production, and that is something that is going down progressively as technology improves with oil. So I think we are in for a choppy environment, and that this is going to be a difficult trading environment for the foreseeable future. And the extent to which oil can rally is likely to have quite a considerable effect on some of the larger shares. For example, Royal Dutch Shell rallied very impressively in 2016, and it has been going down for most of this year already. It is now testing its lows, and this is the area that, if support is going to be found, it's going to be somewhere around this 2000p level. What I also found interesting today is that what we have seen over the last month or two has been the return to performance of agricultural commodities. They were very oversold, and Mosaic is back testing its lows over the last 18 months and was firming in here today. It was up $1.20 on a $23 share. That's a fairly considerable advance. Potash Corp, which really has been out in the cold, was also in positive territory in here today. It was up $1 as well, and these are coming off of really quite depressed levels considering how much they fell in 2015. I mean, potash going from 45 to 20 in 2015, that's a considerable decline, and in fact spending most of this year declining as well. That some upside follow through and a break of the progression of lower rally highs would confirm that we're that there's a low in there of more than short-term significance. And when we turn our attention to the UK, there were a considerable number of high-profile business leaders who were invited to David Davis's house in the country last week, and they were delivering quite a clear message that they want a deal done. They don't want the UK walking away with no deal at all, and that is something that Theresa May is going to have to deliver. She has really made a mess of her approach to the entire Brexit question, And what is really required is some grown-up thinking about exactly what can be achieved and how it is going to be achieved, because, as was anticipated, the Europeans are playing hardball. They hold a significant number of cards, and the only way that the UK can deal effectively is with the very real threat of walking away. And but then, if they do walk away, they would have to introduce some very pro-growth strategies, like private banking laws, like well, very clear low corporate taxes, and basically competing against the EU on absolutely every front. But unfortunately, there doesn't seem to be a great deal of appetite for that kind of negotiation strategy within the negotiating team right now, because it would require the willingness to take short-term pain, and that is something that obviously business leaders do not want to even consider as a potential outcome. What we are seeing, in fact, with the FTSE 100 is that at least there is no signal from the FTSE 100, for example, that there's any panic in the market, that most people are thinking there is going to be a deal. The FTSE has pulled back towards the region of the trend mean in a rather orderly manner, and this is a natural area within the next 100 points that it should find support if this is still a demand-dominated environment. And the pound, when we look at it against the dollar, has been lower over the last 3 days, but it is beginning to steady as it comes back towards the middle of that range and the region of the trend mean. This is also a rather interesting chart pattern in that the pound had trended lower for nearly 3 years and now is showing some of the first signs of a return to demand dominance, and it really will have to hold the range that it's been in for the last couple of months if that is going to remain the case. And when we look at the pound versus the euro, then this is perhaps a somewhat different story. The euro is continuing to strengthen here. It is firming from the region of the upper side of this range, and that's rather important. The pound had bounced emphatically from that 90p area, excuse me, 95p area, and then it spent much of the last year ranging, whereas now the euro is consolidating rather firmly in the region of the upper side of this range, and it would require a breakdown from that in a dynamic manner to question that we're not going to get some additional upside by the euro, and not least because the Europeans are beginning to talk about quantitative tightening, or at least the tapering of their quantitative easing program, and that means that when we have this uncertainty about what's going to happen in the UK, that the euro is firmly against the pound, but it is towards the upper side of its range against the euro, and they are only talking about tapering, whereas it is likely that the US will probably raise interest rates again. There are big questions when we think about what's happening in terms of the retail price index, what's happening in terms of the number of people that are employed in retail, that we are seeing significant downtrends in the department stores, within the big box retailers, and even within the even companies like Costco, which has had one of the most impressive uptrends, we've seen that there has been a significant deterioration. That is a massive reaction against the prevailing uptrend. And I don't think that there is any other way that you could characterize this pullback, where it goes from 180 to 150 in a matter of weeks. This is there is a clear trend happening here, and this represents not just the potential that this is an emerging type 2 top, but other than that, what it's also questioning is how many of these people are employed, that the retail sector employs millions of people, and if a large number of these companies are in really quite a lot of trouble, well then are they going to be letting go of their workers? So that represents a very large question. That is one of the things that is likely to have an influence on central bank policy. So when we then look at what's happening with stock markets, that they're going sideways and that bonds are at a critical juncture, whether whether yields are going to expand or contract from here, that's a large question because certainly we can see that inflationary pressures are beginning to build, that we are in a period of synchronized global economic expansion, but that there are risks out there, that technological innovation is inherently deflationary. And that is something that I don't think is nearly adequately really appreciated by central bankers. And so I think that there is plenty to think about. But as long as we do not have a spike in inflationary pressures, and if the retail sector is contracting at such a rapid pace, then that could keep a lid on the kind of inflation that central banks, in fact, do monitor. Well, then that means liquidity could stay in the market a while longer, and that should ensure that asset prices stay reasonably high. And that's as true of stocks as it is of anything else. So I continue to think that we are in a mean reversion, but it's unlikely to be anything much more than that, and that there is additional upside to be seen in this stock market because we are still, I think, years away from the next recession. And I think with that, I will leave you for today and wish all the best to all of you.